How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez and Dave Meltzer here on Wrestling Observer Radio. It is Monday. Actually, it's Tuesday morning already. It's December 21st, 2010 here at figure4online.com/wrestlingobserver.com. We have Raw to talk about from last night. Actually, a heck of an edition of Raw, quite frankly, especially if you're a fan of pro wrestling. There was a John Cena-Dolph Ziggler match that I actually thought was a hell of a match. And lean to a rematch tomorrow, and they ensured that I don't really want to see it by adding Vicky Guerrero to it, so... What the hell can you do? But pretty strong main event as well. And what did you think of the show?
Yeah, it was a really good show. It felt like they didn't really advance a lot of storyline stuff other than the Cena CM Punk stuff. But I think they did a good job of, you know, it seemed like the primary thing was to try to get a rating for tomorrow night, or for tonight for the live SmackDown show with Miz against Randy Orton in a non-title match and the Cena handicap match against Vicky and Dolph Ziggler. A lot better wrestling than most Raw shows. I mean, Bryan Daniel and William Regal had a really good 4.5-minute match that only made me sad because it only went 4.5 minutes. But
starting to sound like CM Punk now, by the way.
What?
Bryan Daniel?
Daniel Bryan, sorry.
Yeah. Punk can't remember either. He screwed it up every week now.
Yeah, everyone does.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was interesting that Regal clapped for Daniel Bryan after submitting to the LaBelle lock. It was almost it was out of character. You know, obviously the heels William Regal should obviously not do that, but it seems like it felt to me in a sense like Regal kind of almost acknowledged that this was the end of the line for him, and he really wasn't in like you know as soon as he came out there it was like, oh, God, Vince McMahon's just going to hate this because his body looked terrible. But his wrestling was just like it always is. It was actually like a hell of a match.
Yeah.
But it just the way he reacted and everything, you know, he was not like the heel William Regal. He was smiling. It was almost like, hey, I'm gonna get a chance to put this guy over, and I'm happy to do so.
Yeah, well, they did kind of have the storyline of the match as well, where they were really acknowledging that Regal was the one who trained Daniel Bryan, or he helped train Daniel Bryan, and of course they did a bunch of spots where you knew what Bryan was going for when he went for the flying kick, for example, and Regal cut him off, and the idea was that Regal knew all of these moves in advance and he was cutting this guy off, and then finally the student beat the teacher, and you know, Regal was probably, you know, in storyline, perhaps a little proud that his trainee had overcome him in this battle.
You just said all that, and the announcer said none of it. So that's well and good, and I'm glad that you've picked up the storyline, but it was like, that's
not
what they were saying.
It'd be nice to tell the rest of the people. Yeah.
I mean, Punk maybe to a very small degree said that. Colin Lawler didn't acknowledge it at all. So, I mean, it was a hell of a match, and the people were into it, too. I mean, it wasn't like it was just this, like, you know, technically good match that no one cared about. Although they had a very good crowd, and especially when Vicky and John Cena were out there, it was actually unbelievable, to the point of almost being comical how much heat Vicky Guerrero got.
It actually was comical. It became great comedy, in fact. You know, I mentioned this yesterday when I reviewed the show with Vinny. I didn't talk to you about it, but Lawler... I love Jerry Lawler. I think he's great. I thought he was great in the main event tonight. I generally think he's very good on commentary, but last night at the pay-per-view, and part of this is obviously these SmackDown guys. He never watches SmackDown.
But, he doesn't watch anything but Raw.
Oh, my God. Did he sound like he was completely out to lunch last night?
Oh, yeah. Well, at times, because he doesn't watch anything else. I mean, and there's, you know, the whole thing. He's emotionally detached from the product because he's, you know... There's just a lot of reasons. It's not a product he really relates to. So he shows up. I mean, he arrives late. He does his job. He flies, you know, he goes to the hotel, flies home first thing in the morning, and doesn't think about it the rest of the week.
No, and then he shows up. The funny thing is he's
familiar with everyone on Raw, but no, he's not watching SmackDown. So, yeah, like when Alberto Del Rio's out there, I mean, he really doesn't know much about who that guy is.
It's just funny when you think about, like, of all the announcers, he's probably yelled at the least of anybody, probably by a wide margin.
He's not yelled at all because Vince knows that if he yells at Lawler, Lawler will just quit.
Yeah.
You know, the rest of them will take it, and Vince uses that as, you know, the knowledge that, you know, actually all the announcers, like, they basically need the job. And Lawler, you know, Lawler doesn't need the job. Lawler's made a lot of money. Lawler could go home. I mean, Lawler likes it in the sense that he gets paid very well. You know, I don't know exactly what, but, you know, I'm thinking, you know, $250,000 a year, maybe more for, you know, essentially one day work a week, you know, some weeks 2 days. I mean, you know, and for doing something that he can do in his sleep, you know, which is talk. So, you know, but yeah, I mean, Vince knows he can't yell at Lawler because, you know, Lawler's quit before, and when they tried to get him back, it was very difficult to get him back because, you know, Lawler just, you know, they wanted him to come back, and Lawler just, he wasn't that, you know, eventually they made amends and he came back, but it wasn't like it was just like, oh, Jerry, you know, we'll let you back now. And it was like, well, what if I don't want to come back right now?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, and they know that. I think that was really good for Lawler in the long run that he did quit, even though it was, you know, over a kind of a silly situation because it was basically to back up his wife, and then his wife went and left him. So, you know, he kind of, you know, in the long run, he quit his job, you know, for a wife that ended up leaving, you know, because they fired his wife and then his wife left him, which was actually the reason he ended up coming back was because, you know, once she left him, there was no obstacle in him coming back. But I think that in the long run, like now, it benefited him greatly because Vince McMahon knows that, you know, he can't yell at Lawler because Lawler will just go quit and not miss it, you know. I mean, that's the other thing. You know, he won't miss the spotlight because he can, you know, I think he's very comfortable. He can do his indies and, you know, yeah, there's no more Memphis Championship Wrestling, but, you know, he's also, you know, Lawler's 61 years old. I think, you know, he's made his money and, you know, that's the deal. He did a hell of a job in the main event, though.
He did a hell of a job in the main event, and he had the best line of the night, which I'll get into here as we talk about the opening segment. Miz came out, and Punk and Lawler were doing commentary, and of course your first question is, well, where's Michael Cole? And thank God he's gone. But he was not gone for long.
No such luck.
No. Miz came out and did the promo about, you know, the usual heel promo, bragging that everyone was expecting the other guy to win, and he proved them wrong and this and that, and so then scary music played, and out came Alex Riley in chains and a robe, and he said he was the ghost of Christmas past, and he was going to show Miz the error of his ways before it was too late, and he had some footage of Miz beating Lawler at TLC, and of course Miz said, I didn't regret that or any of these past moments I've been a part of. So then we had Cole come out in chains and a top hat, saying he was the ghost of Christmas present, at which point Jerry Lawler said, and I quote, this is the stupidest thing I have ever seen. And I so completely agreed with this. This segment, actually, I will say this. This segment was so goddamn stupid early. But by the end, I thought it was actually a really good segment. But all the ghost stuff at the beginning was just so wacky. And they had Ms. Girl on the big screen and the old Conan O'Brien deal with the lips. And she talked about being the ghost of Christmas future and said he needed to change his ways or he was going to lose to John Morrison. And Miz said he was the future. And Charles Dickens, he said, could not write a better story, which, by the way, that's a lie. So Morrison came out and they bantered back and forth about their future. They didn't mention the Rumble. They just said it's in the future, but presumably it's going to be the Rumble, unless, I guess, Vince watches John Morrison over the next few weeks and thinks he sucks, which hopefully he does not. But yeah.
It's weird, though, because they really put a lot of focus on Orton against Miz. And Orton was clearly, in the trios match, in the main event, I mean, Orton was clearly booked to be the big star in the match, not Morrison.
Well, that was done because they're setting up tomorrow where,
right,
God knows he may be injured.
Who Orton might get injured?
Sure.
Yeah, it's possible that it may take him out with an injury. It's also possible he may beat him in a non-title match, in which case, you know.
Well, we'll get to that in a second because I'm upset about this non-title match we've got tomorrow. But anyway, we had a big schmoz. We had Sheamus hitting the ring. We had Riley going by the announcers. We had Lawler punching Riley. And finally, the GM dinged in and announced that Miz was going to face his past, present, and future in a six-person tonight. I thought for sure the Miz girl would be wrestling, but sadly, not to be. Miz, Riley, and Sheamus.
Thank God. I would rather see Lawler wrestle than her.
Well, we could have replaced, for example, Alex Riley. I don't know.
That's on the wrong team.
I know. Listen, this stuff doesn't have to make sense in 2010. Come on now. Just to be entertaining. Miz, Riley, and Sheamus against Morrison, Lawler, and Orton. And that was the main event of the show. And like I said, I didn't like it early, but it turned out to be a pretty damn good segment, I thought. We had Natalya.
Yeah, Lawler was in it.
Of course, he's great.
I mean, the minute Lawler gets involved in the angle, it's just like, oh, it can't miss.
Yeah,
it's like a really bad angle, and then you throw Ric Flair in at the end. You know, so all of a sudden, it's not such a bad angle.
Well, Lawler, at least on the bright side, is not going into business for himself on promos and writing storylines that don't actually take place.
That's true. But yeah. Then again, if they made a musical chair segment, I'm not sure that Lawler could do as well as Flair.
He wouldn't. There's no one in the world that will ever do that better than Ric Flair.
I mean, you have to admit that the idea of playing musical chairs on television is like the worst idea ever. I mean, it couldn't possibly, you know, I mean, they've done it since and it's always sucked. But that one time they did it, somehow it was actually great.
Yeah, for all of you that are listening to this right now that don't remember Ric Flair playing musical chairs on Raw, go on YouTube, and I'm sure it's on there somewhere. It's the best thing you've ever seen. So check that one out.
Some guys, are just they can just make, you know, they're good at making angles.
We had Alicia Fox, Eve, and Melina in a number one contenders match with Natalya doing commentary. And some of you may be aware, Melina got a quite unflattering haircut. And I don't know if they just thought it was so horrible that they made her wear extensions, or if they want her to wear extensions until Tribute to the Troops airs on Wednesday, and then she'll sport the new haircut. But she was wearing...
she's always had extensions.
Yeah, but I mean, this was like totally covering up this haircut.
Oh, yeah. I know. They showed it because I saw the picture of the haircut, and then, you know... Yeah, that haircut probably wasn't the best idea in the world.
Well, she's turning heel. Maybe it's a great idea.
What, to look like Vicky Guerrero?
Sure!
Yeah, why not?
She's a great heel.
Yeah. There was one thing that, again, I thought CM Punk was tremendous on the show tonight, by the way. But he had one line where I think she said something about, like, you know, you guys are crazy. And he said, imagine a member of the Hart family calling me crazy. I just thought that was, like, the funniest line in the whole world.
That was a good one. So Melina ended up rolling through on a Doomsday Device spot and got the pinfall. So she is the new number one contender, and Natalya got in the ring to congratulate her, and Melina slapped her across the face and then walked to the back with her mean face. And I don't know if that's a heel turn. I guess it is, but
that was the heel turn.
It was pretty damn lame.
Hey, you know, I mean, that's the deal.
Well, there you go. We had the Bellas bebopping around backstage when Daniel Bryan walked up, escorted him to the ring for the match with Regal, and... as noted, about 4 minutes. It was 4 minutes of awesome professional wrestling. God damn, this was great. And they did Regal, like, just kind of destroyed him the entire match and finally tried a butterfly suplex, and Daniel switched into the LaBelle lock and got the submission. And I would have loved to have seen 15 minutes on pay-per-view. I know I shouldn't push my luck. The fact that we got this on Raw and they didn't just throw this on Superstars is it's a great day for all of us. So, a fine battle.
Yeah, but I still wish it was longer, but the crowd loved it, too.
Neil?
Well, you know, a lot more crowd heat than a match with those two should have gotten.
This was a good crowd all night, I will say that. And
I'm
not taking anything away from these two guys. Yeah. Morrison was getting ready in the back, Orton walked in, and Morrison said, you know, the finish of your match last night, I believe he said it was bogus, was his term.
Yeah, I think so.
And Orton said, if you win the title, I want you to know I'm coming after you, and Morrison said, that's fine, I'll be ready. I trust you'll be as well. Yeah, and Orton said, that's your first mistake. Never trust me. So there you go. Wouldn't expect to see that feud anytime soon. But
not right now.
No.
I don't think so.
We had Tamina and Maryse doing a goofy pull apart as Tamina was walking on Santino's back. Pure comedy, if you want to call it that. It was kind of lame. Then we had a weird segment with Henry and Gail Kim backstage. Mark Henry and Gail Kim were having a conversation.
Yeah, that was a weird segment. And boy, was that a stiff conversation.
Oh, yeah.
Poor Gail Kim.
And that's
my God, she was just like, she was so not into those lines. It wasn't even funny.
And this is by Raw standards, everyone.
Raw Diva standards.
And you know, I got to say this again. The thing with Morrison... his delivery in the opening segment here, I thought was so wooden. And you remember, like, it was like 2 or 3 years ago, Miz and Morrison had a confrontation on SmackDown. And they just cut promos on each other. And it I don't know if it wasn't scripted or what the deal was, but they were both awesome. And Morrison as well was awesome in that segment. I've never seen him like that before or since. I don't know what happened in that segment, but he is
Maybe he just had a good day.
I guess he's one of those guys that they give him horrible material. I don't know if he doesn't believe it or if he just can't deliver it. I don't know, but he's just...
I think a lot of it's the delivery.
Yeah,
His delivery is so not real.
Yeah. If anything's going to hold him back, that's way up there as far as holding him back from really legitimately being a top guy. And listen, the main event, the championship match at the Royal Rumble is you know, let's not read too much into this right now. I mean, he's not a tippy top guy right now, and with promos like that,
you have faith that they're going to make a new star and stick with it and not change their mind in 8 weeks?
No, of course not.
I mean, it's like I'm going to need a lot more than just the fact that he beat Sheamus in 2 out of 3 matches. And by the way, Sheamus is coming off more and more mid-card every week.
Well, because that stupid outfit.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I know.
Yeah.
And I mean, calling him King Sheamus also, just not the right idea, because he went from like this fearsome heel to this comedy mid-carder.
Yeah, not good. We had DiBiase and Maurice against Santino and Tamina. And, of course, the big spot at the end was Santino making a big comeback and Maurice tagged in. And, of course, guys can't hit girls. And she managed to turn the Cobra on Santino, who took a bump for his own hand. And,
oh, that was just hilarious.
Oh, yeah. And Tamina tagged in, hit Maurice with a super kick, super fly splash, 1-2-3. And, again, this Maurice-DiBiase breakup is, like, the most slow-moving, most... I don't know. It's getting worse by the week, and it was not good to begin with.
Did she even break up with him this week? She broke up with him every other week.
I know. Then
I just remember her losing, and then they didn't really focus on them at all. And the whole thing was the comedy of Tamina carrying Santino to the back, which was doubly funny because she blew up halfway up the ramp and had to put him down.
Jesus, she's carrying a grown man, a large one.
Yeah, well,
one.
I mean, they had Beth do it on all those spots, and it worked with Beth.
Well,
but I guess
yeah,
Beth is probably, you know, a power lifter. So.
Yeah.
I did think that considering how little experience Tamina had, I thought that she's so clearly not what they want in a woman, which to me is actually a positive, but probably isn't to them. You know, I mean, what she's got going for her is that she's Jimmy Snuka's daughter, and I guess that gives her, like, I don't know, some kind of something. And they have her in this goofy storyline that it doesn't seem like they have any idea exactly where to go with it, but they know they're doing it. So it's kind of like another one of these storylines that lasts forever, or that takes forever to get somewhere because they haven't figured out where they're going, you know.
And then they drop it?
I think they probably haven't figured out how to drop it either.
Well, that's so a good one for them.
So we basically had two storylines that are very slowly moving, but, you know, unlike some of the segments, like some of the angles where we go, oh, my God, they're moving too quick, it's like, in this case, they're two segments that really no one cares about anyway.
And, you know, there are ways to dress people in a flattering and a non-flattering manner, and...
They didn't do that with her.
I think they went out of their way to dress her in a non-flattering manner.
I guess they made her. I'm trying to figure out what they wanted her to be.
They. I don't know. When I just looked at that outfit and I was like, "You really made her wear that on national television?" I mean, what's your goal?
I mean,
here?
She looked like, you know, someone on an indie show.
Yeah, not good. Then we had Cena come out for a very very long segment. First, he celebrated and he talked about how great it was that the show was Nexus free for the first time in 6 months. He sang deep in the heart of Texas. He pandered to the people. He showed footage of the chairs dropping onto Wade, the whole 9 yards. Finally,
over and over and over.
Oh, yeah, this went on forever.
You know, the other thing, before the segment, the whole show they're building up, John Cena returns tonight, and I was just thinking, like, yeah, I know, man. I'm so excited to see John Cena back. I mean, I've missed him all those months.
Yeah.
You know?
So Vicky came out with Dolph. And she was trying to explain that Cena was not the only man who had won a match at the pay-per-view. And every time she began to speak, the people booed so loudly that it appeared she could not even keep a straight face after a while. And
she couldn't. Cena couldn't. It was just hilarious. And then Cena would like tell the people, you know, we're on live TV, please let her talk. And that only encouraged them, which, you know, to scream even louder.
Yeah, he actually had to stop her from speaking and deliver her lines for her so that the people would give them a break. Otherwise, as he noted, we're going to be here for 45 minutes.
Yeah.
And long story short, they... him and I guess Cena and Lawler did a bunch of fat jokes, making fun of Vicky and Dolph.
They were well delivered. I mean, like I'm not really a big fan of the fat jokes on Vicky, but somehow this segment was really good anyway.
Yes, Lawler is always awesome.
Lawler was really good, but still, so was Cena.
Yeah, he was very good too. So finally, Dolph could take no more, and he attacked Cena, and the GM dinged and announced that tonight it's going to be the two of you in a one-on-one match. They had a great fucking match. I thought this match was so great. And it was basically, Dolph out-wrestled him a little early. Cena did some stuff. Dolph cut him off. And the deal was that, like, every time Cena did the comeback that you thought was going to be the beginning of his big comeback, he would get cut off again. And he sold and he sold and he sold and he fought and he sold. And the crowd was going nuts. And finally, he makes his big comeback and ended up tapping him out with the... actually hit the FU for the pin.
There was a bunch of interference. That when Vicky distracted the ref?
Yeah, Vicky took the ref. There was a tap out. Dolph hit the Fame Asser, which Cole could not identify after all these months.
It's now called the Zigzag.
Well, the Zigzag's something different.
I know that, but Cole's been calling that move the Zigzag for weeks now.
I see.
I don't even watch SmackDown, and I know that, because it's like...
Maybe they've renamed it like the Celtic Cross for the 84th time.
Could be.
Anyway, they
yeah. So we don't know if Cole's just like wrong or right, because they may have changed the name of the hold.
I just presume he's wrong. That's my usual yeah. Anyway, Dolph a great near fall. Everybody bought it, and Dolph undid a corner pad. The ref went to put it back. Dolph tried to hit him with a belt. Cena ducked and hit the FU for the pin. And the match was so great. And then the GM dinged, and they announced that the rematch was... Actually, no, this was something different. This was Vicky later announced a rematch for the next day, and then added that she was putting herself into the match. And I thought...
Why?
Why? I don't know. But, so anyway, I was excited for SmackDown for about 10 seconds there, and then I was not excited at all afterwards.
Ziggler did a great, great job in this match. It was one of the best performances I think I've seen from him.
Oh, God, I think it was his best.
Yeah, I mean, just...
he was outstanding in this match.
Yeah, I think that he may have opened some eyes.
This was the kind of match where I just thought, you know, Vince has got to be watching this match in the back and going, wow, never knew this kid had it in him, or something like that.
Yeah, he stepped up like a potential big star here.
Yeah. And then we had the big deal where Punk attacked Cena with chair shots. I guess last week he promised, or he didn't really promise, he just spoke of an unnamed foe in the back. And a week later, it's John Cena. And that was the end of that.
He got great heat too.
Yeah.
You know, people didn't expect it. The unfortunate thing is then he left the building and didn't announce the rest of the show.
So presumably he's healed.
Yeah, I think he's done with announcing too.
Yeah.
Well, it's you know.
Fun while it lasted.
Yeah.
We had the Sheamus-Lawler confrontation where basically Lawler noted he'd been the king since 1974.
God, that sounds so long ago.
I was not even born in 1974, so I was really thinking.
But I thought that like he would say I've been the king for a long time. I didn't think he would like actually give the year.
Yeah.
You know, the year that Bobby Shane gave him the crown. You know, but I mean,
yeah.
Wow, 1974, it's almost 37 years ago.
Don't tell me that.
What?
Well, that means I'm almost 37. And actually,
wow,
it'd be,
that's scary.
It'd be 30,
I'm much older than you.
It'd be 36.
What?
It'd be 36.
Wow.
Yeah.
You're out of the 18 to 34 demo.
I know. That happened in June. I became uncool.
Yeah, but you're in the prime TNA demo, so that's great.
Well,
your prime demo's 35 to 49.
If only I had a Nielsen box, I'd send a message every week.
And actually, that's the more people in... Actually, of all the demos, the demo that has the most viewers of Raw is actually 50 plus.
Really?
So I'm actually in the prime Raw demo. which is scary because they do absolutely nothing for the age group that more people watch Raw on. They do absolutely nothing for them, and no one, I don't know anyone of my friends now who, like, and every one of them grew up a wrestling fan. I don't know one. I mean, there's some that, like, I have one friend who's, like, you know, still follows it and stuff, but no one that's, like, wants to watch the shows or anything like that, or go to live shows, or, you know, it's not, and it's not, like, in conversations, like, ever. You know, people don't bring it up. It's not like it's football or something. And I mean, we grew up watching this stuff from, you know, the age of nine. It's crazy. I mean, it really is just crazy.
Yeah, I don't know.
I
what
mean, it really has hit me, you know, in recent years, what a great job they've done of running off their most loyal audience.
That's astounding, really.
Yeah. You know, and I don't think they realize it either.
We had the main event, Lawler, Morrison, and Orton versus Sheamus, Miz, and Alex Riley, and had a pretty good match. King, the story
King
of the
was
match.
Great.
What were you saying?
The King was great.
The King was very great.
I loved when he threw the punches and the drop kick and pulled down the strap and people going crazy.
He did all his spots. He worked a little bit with Miz early.
Well,
he
still didn't do the fist drop.
No. Probably knees aren't feeling it these days.
Yeah.
But Miz cut him off. They worked him over for a while. He got a hot tag, and Morrison then got beaten on for a while, and they built up to the big deal, which was Miz and Orton getting hot tags together, because Miz wanted nothing to do with Orton early. So Orton ran wild, and they did basically a six-way. Lawler, Morrison low-bridged Sheamus. Riley hit the ring, Orton hit the RKO. Miz then flew in and hit Orton with a high kick, and Orton stumbles to the corner, and Lawler makes a blind tag, and Miz grabbed him and was going to go for the skull-crushing finale when Orton snuck in and gave him the RKO, and then Jerry Lawler pinned the Miz, and everybody cheered, went nuts, Lawler celebrated, and then the GM dinged and announced that it was going to be Miz versus Orton tomorrow. And I thought, what about poor Lawler? Just been the champ. Maybe he'll get it next week. Who knows? It's the Christmas season where nothing matters. So I guess we'll see.
No, they should do. You know, the thing is that they have three different people. You know, and all three of the babyfaces in that match all probably should be getting a shot.
Well, this is like I just remember. I don't know, probably 4 or 5 years ago now. Where I think it was in San Antonio, Shawn Michaels and Triple H, I think it was.
Oh, they had that 30-minute match that was really awesome.
Yeah, just outstanding. And it was during this. It was during kind of the Christmas weekend where
it was. I think it was actually like December 29th or 30th or whatever the Monday was that week. It was the week. I think it was right after Christmas.
Yeah, and the whole idea is you've got a long time until the Royal Rumble. I don't think they're doing that New Year's Revolution show or anything like that this year, are they?
No. Next pay-per-view is January 30th, so we got a long build.
That's great. So they got a lot of time. They don't have to rush through a bunch of stupid angles. They don't have to you know, they can...
How much you want to bet that they... Well, actually, this one maybe they won't, but I just have this feeling they got 6 weeks between shows, and they probably won't announce the show until the Monday before the pay-per-view.
Well, I hope they have a little more for the Royal Rumble prior to that, but... Point is, they got some time to breathe. They got some time to just put matches on the show. They've got some time to not rush. They got some time to actually do, you know what? Do a Jerry Lawler Miz title match in a straight match.
They
Who
should
cares?
Do a Jerry Lawler Miz title match. People want to see it.
Yeah. So
absolutely.
So,
they have an open-ended issue. Lawler pinned him in this one. You know, I mean, Miz would have to, you know, would have to win the match, but that's cool. You know,
I wish they would really.
That's how it should end anyway.
I really think that they should. And we talked about this a million times. They got to drop down to 12 pay-per-views and maybe even 11. Just the idea of have some time. You know what I mean? The 2 weeks between shows is like, you know, it's not like it's a positive in any conceivable way. They're doing horrendous, you know, like historically low buy rates. You know, rushing through programs, which hurts your other pay-per-views. I mean, the best, you know, the best pay-per-view they have is WrestleMania. And obviously, the WrestleMania name is a big part of that. But it's also a period where you have 6 weeks to build up that pay-per-view. I mean, that's a big deal right there. So,
yeah,
it's
also the, you know, I mean, that's a traditional thing.
Well, yeah, it is the big show of the year. But, you know, can you imagine... I mean, what did WrestleMania do? Like 480 in domestic or something like that this year?
498.
498.
The final number.
Can you imagine if they tried to build up WrestleMania with 3 weeks?
Yeah, they wouldn't do so well.
You really think it would do 498? I don't.
No. Well, this year they don't have to go the day after a George St. Pierre fight. So so in that sense they already have an advantage. But the disadvantage is I have no idea what they got, and nor does anyone else. You know, I mean, I guess maybe it is a little early. Usually they pull the celebrity out at the Rumble and the day after the Rumble. So we're still, you know, weeks away. But they better have something like really good under their sleeve, because without it, with what they just have as far as the wrestlers that they have on the roster, they wouldn't, you know, they're not going to do well at, you know, they're not going to do a mania numbers this year.
They did a hard sell for Dolph and Vicky versus Cena and Miz and Orton, and they didn't really do that hard a sell for the Rey Mysterio Alberto Del Rio match.
I didn't even know they have a Rey Mysterio Alberto Del Rio match tomorrow night.
I'm pretty sure they did. I could have sworn I saw
You may have
one single commercial. I thought I saw, or maybe I could be completely out of my mind. That's not.
I mean, it would make sense. They were supposed to do it at the pay per view anyway, but I didn't even know that.
Yeah. All right. Let's get the Strikeforce update. What is going on?
Let's see. Hodger Gracie and Trevor Prangley have been added to the show, which is a good test for Hodger Gracie, who's awesome, awesome submission guy. But he's one of these one-dimensional fighters who's really good at their one dimension. I mean, he's such a great submission guy, but his striking is terrible. Now, he's really tall. He's like, I don't know, 6'4". But, you know, and Prangley's a good wrestler, pretty good striker. You know, probably susceptible to submissions from Gracie, but so they've added that, and also Herschel Walker and the Scott Carson Herschel Walker fight that was going to be on the December 4th show has now been added. So we've got we've got the Jacare Souza Robbie Lawler. So it's three matches that are pretty much finalized. I haven't heard anything about Mayhem and Tim Kennedy, if that's a done deal. That was the way they were working on. I know they were working on two heavyweight fights as well. I don't know if they're going to have any of those on this show. So that's what we got now.
Just went up to the WWE.com
site. I tell you what, think about that, though. This show, I mean, for San Jose, God, I can't see. It's you know, unless they got a really big heavyweight fight, you know, and Fedor, it's looking like Fedor's not going to be ready for January 29th. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, they're trying to get Fedor and Bigfoot Silva. That might be in February or March now. Or may never happen, you know, because they don't have a deal with Fedor yet. But Prangley and Hodger Gracie. If you look at the lineup they got, it's like no relevance to San Jose. So it's going to be, you know, I mean, I guess that they're going to do 7,000 to 9,000 people no matter what, but that's what they're going to do.
Should note that WWE.com site lists nothing about a Alberto Del Rio Rey Mysterio match.
So maybe you imagined it.
Maybe it
was something they were building up for the pay-per-view that didn't happen.
Or I saw the future.
Well, I'm sure they're going to wrestle again, like, very soon.
We'll find out.
They have a feud.
They are feuding, that is for sure. All right, let's jump into the mailbag here. We got a lot of good questions here tonight. This person says, what is the deal with Orton using the angle slam? Isn't this generally frowned upon in wrestling? Tonight was the second
angle's not in the same promotion, so... I mean, yeah, I noticed that the last couple matches he's been doing it, like, you know, near the end of every match.
If you are not in the company, it does not matter.
Yeah. I mean, look at Michelle and Cool.
Yeah, Styles Clash.
Yeah.
You know, there are some moves, though, where... like you see an indie guy use a pedigree, it's kind of goofy, you know what I mean? Like there are certain moves.
Yeah, on indie shows, that's what the people come to see. They want to see someone do a stunner and a pedigree.
Well, the stunner, I mean, that's everyone knows the pop you're getting right there, but I don't know. It's same with the Styles Clash. I mean, Michelle using the Styles Clash, it's just like the move is so associated with a single guy that it comes off goofy when she uses it. Not like
she doesn't know that.
Well, yeah, but I mean, it's not like the downward spiral, which, you know.
Everyone in the world does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Do you know who came up with the Eddie Guerrero material used in the Orton Mysterio feud and the build-up to WrestleMania 22? Orton said Eddie was in hell. He also said Ray has as much of a chance of beating him as Eddie does of coming back to life. Did it surprise you at the time, considering it was only a few short months after Eddie passed? Or does it seem strange looking back that they were doing this sort of thing just a few years ago? Actually,
a lot of people pissed off that week.
Jump into the archives on the website and look at the old figure fours from that period, and you will read some venom spewed.
There were some people pissed off that those weeks that
yeah.
would later publicly say that they weren't, but boy, they were.
They were extremely angry.
Oh boy, I remember that week. You know when that? I mean, you know, including I think everyone involved in the skit.
Yeah.
As I recall, I know Randy Orton was just very unhappy about having to say those lines.
Yeah.
Mysterio was very unhappy. And of course, later it's only wrestling, but boy, I just remember that week. I don't know who came up with the lines, which is funny because it really was a big issue at the time. But what I do know is that whatever it was a directive directly from Vince, and nobody. It was one of those things where nobody was going to defy Vince. I mean, because Randy Orton's a big star and can get away with a lot, and Ray, when he picks the spots, can actually get away with a lot as well. But no one got, it happened and no one questioned it. So I think that it was, as far as they knew, it was a Vince thing, and then it was one that you couldn't say no to.
This person says, one piece of information I haven't heard from the Chael Sonnen PED issue is, what was the therapeutic dose he claims he was taking? Therapeutic doses range from 100 to 250 milligrams a week of testosterone, but at 100 milligrams a week, he's at relatively normal levels, and at 250 a week, you are absolutely in performance-enhancing territory.
That's a very good question, because...
Chael didn't seem to have any idea, he claimed.
The doctor asked him that very specific question, and Chael said...
Or no, he had an absurdly high number.
It was, like, ridiculous.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, I forgot what he said, but when he said it, the doctor goes, well, that's completely ridiculous. And that's when the doctor really stopped trusting him because, you know. So, yeah, the answer is that they had about eight tests done at different points in time that showed Chael's testosterone level at normal range while he was getting this therapy, okay? Somehow, it has been misconstrued by people that there was, in fact, a test the week of the Anderson Silva fight that showed he was normal. Now, he claimed, of course, he was normal. His doctor claimed he was normal. But there were no tests actually done. So we don't know what he was the week of the Anderson Silva fight. And if, you know, so, I mean, if he'd been, if he had declared... you know, this stuff ahead of time, and they'd gone through the regular channels, he would, in fact, have been tested before the fight, after the fight, and if he was in normal range, then that's cool, and if he wasn't, then that would not be cool, but we don't know. And Chael, evidently, that was really weird, because how would you not know? And he, you know, you're shooting yourself up, how would you not know? How do you not know? I don't get it.
Well, that answers your question, actually.
I guess.
You would think, I mean, it's one thing if you have, like if you're prescribed a pill, for example, and you don't know how many milligrams it is.
Oh, yeah, no, I take a pill, you just take the pill.
Yeah,
but when you're shooting yourself up, you
kind of
know how much
know.
You have to put in there, don't you?
You should, unless they give you, like, blank syringes with just a line on them, which I find hard to believe.
I don't buy that.
No. All right, this person says, with all the talk of judging on Sunday's show, got me wondering something. Dave, you were approached about becoming a judge for UFC 18 in New Orleans. Were there any specific reasons you did not go on to judge any further UFC events during that era?
Well, actually, I'm trying to remember what the deal was, but I mean, I actually was called to judge a couple of other shows, and what happened was when... the Fertittas bought the company, their very first show in New Jersey, they got a, what happened was, I think it was the New Jersey commission, because Nevada had not yet sanctioned it, I don't think, or maybe they had, but they were, well, I talked to Ratner, so, and this was before Ratner went to work for UFC and when Ratner was working in Nevada, and they were compiling a list of judges that I was on. The gist of what happened was, and this was on the first show that I did as well, that I was asked to judge, and all the MMA writers started crying foul. How come he can judge? He's a pro wrestling guy, blah, blah, blah. So they ended up letting Eddie Goldman judge as well, which was very difficult because there were people who, in UFC who absolutely hated him. But, you know, it was like, I think he was probably the one complaining the most. So it's like, okay, well, Dave judges, he can judge. So later, you know, I judged, and it was, you know, not a big deal at the time. And then when in one of the New Jersey shows, I think it was, like I said, that it was, I don't remember what the show was. I think it was the one where Uno fought Jens Pulver, where I was supposed to judge. And again, you had the MMA media people. If he gets to judge, how come he gets to judge? We should all get to judge. And from what I was told, Dana White, after the show, or actually before the show, Dana White just felt that this is just ridiculous and we shouldn't have any media people judging. It's just not worth the hassle. And they came to me and just said, like, you know, you're on the list. And, you know, it was a nice way of saying, you know, you're causing more hassle and we can just get other judges. And, you know, so that's kind of where it ended. You know, it's too many people complained that they weren't going to get to judge if I got to judge, and it just turned into something silly.
Bunch of crybabies.
I guess. It's just as well. I'm glad because it didn't. It's best for all concerned that I didn't judge from that point on. You know, it just, you know what? I shouldn't, you know, a media person probably shouldn't be judging. So just as well. I'm glad I didn't.
This person says about Miz, I've actually been pretty happy they put the title on a new guy in WWE and are actually trying to make a new star. My concern is that his title reign already seems eerily similar to Chris Jericho's title run when he beat The Rock and Stone Cold. So excited that Jericho was champion, but so frustrated that he came off as a guy who didn't really win the title and was booked as a weak champion. As a result, I think it killed the business and made Jericho look like he couldn't draw. As a result, they pulled the title off of him.
Well, they were going to pull the title off of Jericho no matter what. He was always a place center for Hunter.
Yeah, the whole Jericho deal, I mean, it went exactly as it was supposed to go. It was not like he was scheduled to have this long title reign and then they felt that he couldn't draw and so they took it off of him early. It was exactly as it was supposed to be.
Yeah, the only difference is just that they didn't. They still could have booked him better, though.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Well, the stuff with the dog, for Christ's sake.
Yeah.
So stupid. Yeah. He says, "I really think if they had made Jericho a strong heel champion, he could have proven himself." And what do you guys think about the comparison? Similar or not? And do you think that the numbers are going to make his title reign short? Actually, all of his outside of the ring publicity, of which he has gotten in abundance, is probably going to make it longer.
Yeah, I think so, because they were not expecting the media to go gaga over him winning the title, and they got so much more publicity than they expected, so they're very happy with him. And I think he's doing a great job.
Yeah, he's great with the media, so that's going to help him as well.
Yeah, and Jericho would have been great with the media, except that he didn't have those opportunities.
Yeah,
but you know, the other thing is that there's no situation where someone is on this date going to win this championship and it's plans that aren't going to change. You know, it's a different thing. You know, they don't book as far in advance. So there's when you don't book as far in advance, you're not in your mind locked into a certain direction. I don't know. I sense that he's going to, you know, hold it at least till Mania. And the deal is there's no other real big heels. Whereas when Jericho was champion, even though he got a lot of, you know, Austin and Rock kept putting him over and over, if you actually look at the results, but even so, in the storylines, you know, with the dog and everything, he still, even with those wins, came off as a weak champion. With Miz, I just don't see, you know, what other, I don't know, I don't see him coming off. I mean, he's going to be a chicken shit champion, which is different from being a badly booked champion like Jericho or Rey Mysterio or Jack Swagger, were all very poorly booked champions. I don't see him being a poorly booked champion. But he's going to be a guy who, like, escapes by the skin of his teeth because he's not physically imposing, and that's the role that they want for him. You know, where he could almost lose to a Jerry Lawler, where he's going to run away from Randy Orton, where he's going to run away from John Cena, you know, when that day comes as well. So, you know, if you were expecting him to be this champion who goes out and beats everyone clean, yeah, he ain't going to be that guy. But I think that their mentality of him is that, and I don't think he's going to be hurt as much by it, because I think with the dog thing, and there was like a lot of stuff that was done with Jericho that undermined him. And there were reasons that that happened, and I don't see people out to get the Miz, so to speak. And so I don't see it happening.
One more here. It's a two-part question. When Doink wrestled in WWF in 1993, Bobby Heenan always said on commentary, he really looks familiar. Was that supposed to lead to something in the storyline?
Maybe it was one of those things where it was the inside thing to the people who knew it was Matt Bourne, and it was just like, he really looks familiar, and just leave it at that. I remember Bill Watts did this with The Missing Link, because The Missing Link was Dewey Robertson, who had worked the territory many years earlier, and I think even had a program with Bill Watts. But almost nobody knew that The Missing Link was Dewey Robertson. So Bill Watts, when he would do the commentary, just goes, there's something about this guy that looks familiar. Like maybe it was one of my old opponents. But they never, ever, you know, came in the end and go, oh, by the way, The Missing Link is Dewey Robertson. You know, but it was like, I guess if people figured it out, they could say, oh, you know, Bill, you know, acknowledged it, but he doesn't remember. And because again, it wasn't. He looked so different that people didn't know, but I guess it was just saying it. And I think that maybe Heenan was doing that like, well, if you know, I'm letting you know that there's something there, but, you know, we're never going to. But I don't believe it was ever going to go anywhere where, you know, he was going to be unmasked as Matt Bourne or anything, you know, anything close to that. And it would have been stupid to do it because, you know, Doink losing the Doink identity, you know, just never would have made sense.
And what's the deal with Mr. Perfect leaving and coming back to the WWF? He left in November 93, back in April 94, leaving in May 94, and then back in November 95, and then leaving again in November of 96.
Yeah, well, he had an insurance settlement with Lloyd's of London, so he's getting paid a ton of money and would just kind of disappear and leave for a while, and then they would call him up and bring him back to announce or manage or something like that. So that was kind of the deal. And then eventually he came back and wrestled. Although, he, you know, unlike with Shawn Michaels, who came back, you know, from his career-ending injury and was just, like, awesome, when he came back, he was never the same.
Oh, yeah. Everybody, we've got a brand new issue of Figure Four Weekly that's about to go up. It's got another look at some of the best matches of 2010. For those of you that aren't watching a lot of wrestling and listening to this show and just think that wrestling sucks nowadays, it's going to be a list of some of the matches you can go out of your way to see that are really, really great. And it's actually interesting in that last week I wrote a big story on the best matches I saw in 2010. And then this weekend comes, and four-star matches this week alone. It's a hell of a week to be a wrestling fan between ROH and the TLC pay-per-view. So that's going to be up right now. We've got a new back issue of The Observer, which is up. Got a lot of shows coming up. Rosie is on the show tomorrow, Figure Four Daily. Got a lot to talk to him about. And, of course, Brian and Vinny's show. Dave and I will be back on Wednesday. And Thursday, we'll have a look at the year in Lucha with Cubs fan and Dr. Lucha. And Todd Martin's going to be on as well. So a lot of stuff. Check it out, and we'll talk to you again after a while.